December 4, limiting aggressive panhandling by the sheriff's office.
Yeah.
That's why you sat in my office.
All right, so we're going to turn it over to you gentlemen. And
I'll start us off here.
I think let's just do a quick thing.
Oh, whoever's speaking, I gotta start pass this it to the speaker. Oh, we got to do the pass here. I got to start this one too. Double record everything. Okay, so this is the December 4th, 2013 work session on aggressive panhandling and a potential for an aggressive panhandling ordinance. I'm Axel Swanson. Thanks, Mr. Chair. We've got members from the Sheriff's Department here to talk about this. They've been doing a lot of the research and background on it and work with the community on it and that part of the discussion in terms of rolling it out and talking about the concepts. And then I invited Vanessa here and community services to talk about sort of some of the other consequences or impacts, and just so we have that balance of discussion about what this is and what it could lead to. Why don't we do a quick introduction, though, just in case there's someone here that doesn't know everybody. Mark, you want to just
sure, start? Sure. Mark Kelly, County Administrator. Steve Chate, Sheriff's Office.
Randon Walker, Clark County Sheriff's Office, Graveyard Patrol.
Mike Evans, Clark County Sheriff's Office, Chief Criminal Deputy.
I'm Axel Swanson, the board.
Kelly.
Kelly, so the board.
Vanessa Gaston, Clark County Community Services.
Andy Silver with the Council for the Homeless.
David Bedore, Commissioner.
Okay, great. We got that out of the way. So the purpose of the discussion today, and I think the board is very aware of this because actually Commissioner Mielke and I just had a discussion about one of the citizens that has come and talked to us repeatedly about this in the past year, but the purpose really is to respond to some citizen concerns that we've heard over the course of the last year or so regarding aggressive panhandling and how to properly deal with it. Obviously, listen to the sheriff's recommendations about what they would propose as a tool for their department in dealing with this behavior. And then also, like I said, hear from community services about potential impacts to folks that are disenfranchised for reasons beyond their own and maybe how to, work on limiting those impacts. And then really, as usual in these, just to get direction from the board. Where do you want us to go from here in terms of direction for either language in an ordinance, no ordinance at all, or scheduling a hearing to talk about a code change? I put a bullet down there at the bottom. This was kind of key to Pierce County's code and what they said when they rolled out their ordinance, and what their analyst said when I talked to him this week was they weren't trying to outlaw or prohibit or totally ban panhandling. They're just trying to control and limit it so it provides a little bit more security and safety to the citizens in the community. So again, we don't need to dwell on this. I just said these things, but this, this really was about citizen complaints, public safety, creating a tool for the sheriff, and creating some consistency among local jurisdictions. In the packet I handed out to you, I didn't include a slide, and I should have, but I did talk with Chad Eichen at the city, and I did talk to one of their, I didn't talk to him, but I got an email from one of their police officers just asking how their ordinance works. And so the last page of, behind, I guess, the Pierce County ordinance, which I've provided you, is the City of Vancouver's code, and then probably more critical to their code than just the code provision is the definition of aggressive panhandling. And they actually don't talk about it, I think, in terms of aggressive panhandling. They talk about pedestrian interference, and that could also include interference with vehicles and moving vehicles. So just be aware of, when I say consistency among the local jurisdictions, I mean Vancouver does have a policy in place, and they are, I think, enforcing it. Although when I did talk to the police officer today, said they'd only had about 10 or so occurrences last year where they actually directly used or utilized that section of the code. Vanessa, you asked me to stick a slide in here, and for whatever reason, I put it right here. Yeah. Do you want me to come back to it?
Yeah, come back to it.
All right. So we'll start off with going through. Now, I handed you the long version of the Pierce County Code, and I meant for this to be kind of an interactive discussion. So if you have questions, ask. If I know that Sergeant Walker's been very involved in this, he can jump in at any time, and so can you, Vanessa. But I wanted just to quickly go through the types of limitations that are in the Pierce County Code and what we would be potentially looking at. Those are in four areas. They limit the location of where you can panhandle, your behavior, how you can panhandle, what time you can panhandle, and the distance really falls into all three of those categories. So it's pretty much 25 feet or a 25-foot restriction from certain places.
So, Axel,
Yeah.
And Dr. Sheriff's Department had a chance to maybe compare or know the difference between Pierce County and the City of Vancouver.
Well, I'll let them give you some specifics if they want, but we have been meeting with and working with the Sheriff's Department, and they really did the research on this, and in fact, about the same time I was poking around Pierce County's ordinances where we connected, and they had already done that research, and so we were kind of on the same page. But I don't know if you want to add anything, Sergeant Walker, about comparing them.
Simply that Vancouver's ordinance is very small and doesn't address what I consider the needs are in our community. The Pierce County ordinance that we've been modeling after is much more comprehensive, is much more forgiving in nature. For instance, Girl Scouts selling cookies, Boy Scouts selling Christmas trees. It allows for things like that, whereas the policy in the City of Vancouver is much more restrictive.
So, as far as location limitations in the Pierce County ordinance, you're talking about ATMs, where you'd be taking out cash, public pay phones. This says, you know, self-service car washes, gas stations, but you're really talking about isolated locations where people could be alone or vulnerable because they have cash on hand and people know that. Those kind of areas where, you know, you want to go, you may be vulnerable because you're by yourself or you're in an isolated location and you don't want someone coming up behind you or watching you or coming close to you in that particular type of an environment or situation. That's also public transportation is included in there. You know, if you're trying to catch a bus to go to work, you're kind of in a confined trap place. You can't catch a bus anywhere but a bus stop. So it's a little frustrating probably for some folks if they're continually getting solicited for money at a location that they have to use to get to work. And in the worst case scenario, people might avoid public transportation because of that. Another one is you're in a parking lot. Maybe it's in the evening, but you're entering or exiting your vehicle. People know that you have to go to or from your vehicle, or you don't have another choice. And so that's one in the Pierce County Code where it talks about staying away from folks who are trying to get to or from their car because they don't have another option. And then there's, you know, location limitations continued is what we've talked about or seen. It's kind of, I was driving home actually yesterday, and there was a gentleman in a wheelchair just right out here on the off-ramp coming into the Main Street exit. And, you can sympathize with that individual, certainly, but it just looked really dangerous, you know, because it wasn't up on the curb, it was actually on the pavement of the off-ramp. So this Pierce County Code goes to that, talks about pedestrian collisions with vehicles and trying to avoid those and not allowing that type of panhandling in that type of an environment. And then this one, you know, maybe one of the more controversial ones, I guess that's just my personal opinion, is there's kind of a broader provision in Pierce County that talks about public places, and it contributes to the loss of access and enjoyment of public places. Now, public places is pretty broad. I think there is a definition in there. I don't know if I included it, but that's one we probably would want to talk about or hear from citizens about. Public places could be broadly interpreted, and, you know, that would be, in my opinion, if you included it or you included it in the wrong way, would be a pretty blanket prohibition on a lot of panhandling, because most places you can panhandle, I assume, are public places. So that's one we probably would need to or should talk about, and maybe we can get some feedback. And then this one at the bottom is kind of confusing the way it's written, but that's your grocery store. That's your Walmart parking lot. You know, you see a lot of solicitation happening at the entrance and exit of those places, and so Pierce County, actually, when I talked to the policy analyst up there, that was really their big problem. Most of their complaints came from large retailers near freeway on and off ramps, and people were living in the woods behind the stores or around the stores, and then they were coming out and really harassing a lot of the clientele and customers during the day. And so they put this provision in there about not being able to panhandle on private property without consent of the owner. And so that's what it's really talking about, is those large retail centers. So some limitations in the Pierce County Code on distance and time. You've got, I talked about earlier, the 25 feet, which basically it just, you know, if you, again, if you're visualizing that person using the ATM on the street, this is basically saying you got to be 25 feet away from those people. Give them their space and their buffer. Stay away from them because they're in a vulnerable situation. And then there's a provision here, and this, I would put this kind of like I did the other one. This is another one that's kind of a policy judgment, I think, by the board. But Pierce County says no panhandling at night. So, you know, obviously at night it's harder to see. Your threat awareness is a little more up. You might be a little more concerned. But to me, that's one that I think the board really needs to think about, because that's quite a time limitation in terms of allowing people to panhandle or not, because you're taking the whole evening away. And then limitations on behavior. Sorry this slide is so wordy, but there was no other real way to do it. The Pierce County Code limits coercive solicitation, and then they define coercive. So you really need the definition to understand what they're talking about, because that could be a matter of interpretation. I won't read all seven of those things. Most of those are probably against the law anyways. I'll let the Sheriff's Department speak to that, but some of them, you know, may or may not be, depending on your interpretation. But, you know, this really is the situation where I actually had this happen to me in Chicago one time. I was walking down the street, and I had an individual start shining my shoe at an intersection when I was waiting to cross. And I told him no repeatedly. I don't need that. No, thank you. And then the individual started demanding money for it because he'd already done some work on one of my shoes. So bottom line is, it was an uncomfortable situation, and I ended up with one shine shoe and one not shine shoe and looking pretty ridiculous. But it was very intimidating. You know, you're in an environment where you don't know anybody. I was with a friend, luckily, at the time. But it was, you know, the way it was done was, it was coercion. It was meant to intimidate, pay me or else type of thing. So. Anyways, that's the limitation in the Pierce County Code on behavior and coercive solicitation. So this is the last slide, and we can go back to Vanessa's, but again, just to go back over with the board, you know, we've got a good draft code that we've based off of Pierce County. I think it does have some policy considerations for the board to decide if, A, you want to go forward with this, and B, how far you want to go with it in terms of limitations. We'd need to set a hearing. And then I think there's a good conversation that we can probably have about the effective date, outreach, education, and the probationary period. Obviously, you don't want to just put something into place, go out and start nailing people with a fine and, you know, right away and really holding their feet to the fire. You would want to do some outreach, and the sheriff's talked about that, you know, letting people know what the change is and that it's going into effect and, you know, that they need to start changing their behavior or their location. Let's see. You were right here, Vanessa. So I'll turn over to the board for any questions you might have, and then if not, I'll kind of let the Sheriff's Department give some more from their perspective, and then Vanessa as well. From
yes, I'm aware that we have the I-5 corridor here, and there are people may come into our area not knowing that we have such an ordinance. And I when it comes to signage, is there any way that we can communicate to them?
I think the answer is yes. We have all kinds of options as it relates to signage. One of the things that's important to remember as well, though, is this particular, for lack of better terms, culture, the homeless and transient population, their communication networks is amazing. They know where locations have ordinances and rules through their communication networks, and the word spreads very, very quickly.
That community, they do communicate.
They very effectively, surprisingly so.
So to follow up on that, so what kind of a practice of enforcement would take place? How would you It's the first time that you go out there and hand them a pamphlet.
I believe he has any
phone most of the time. Okay.
Did you run into him again? They did last time. I bet you I gave you the rules that you could possibly be required. Is that kind of a practice?
Yeah, we have experience with adopting ordinances to address behavioral issues. As an example, in the 80s, there was a very significant cruising phenomena in Hazeldale. And along with that came a lot of very undesirable behaviors, gang activity, malicious mischiefs. And so a cruising ordinance was adopted. And we did a very significant outreach effort in order to educate people who were involved, signage, media releases and things, so that there was a very good educational and outreach component ahead of time. Typically, we would rely upon that heavily. The whole goal for us is to see the reduction of the problem, the impacts of the problem, and not, the goal isn't to see how many tickets we can write or how many people we can put in jail. Never has been, never will be. Typically, it's an educational process. It gives us an ability to have a little bit of teeth behind our words rather than say, we need you to go away. But then take a lot of them and say, well, you can't make me. Well, now we would have an ability to do that, which would influence behavior. Last resort would be to make an arrest. Like Axel mentioned, there was 10 in the city last year, which is, not a very, very significant number.
If I may, Commissioner, just this summer we had a significant problem with transient people living under the overpasses at 78th Street and 99th Street. We posted those no trespassing eventually. We educated those folks, explained options to them, so on and so forth. Since that's been in process for the past remainder of the year, we've written a total of 2 tickets. No one has gone to jail.
So it'd be something like on certain ramps with the practices going on, would that be a place that you might post a notice of panhandling ordinance in force or something like that? Something to let them know that there's some kind of an ordinance.
And those are certainly options that, as we move forward, if you wish, that we can address as part of the education and outreach component of this. And we could work with our call stats and look at locations to and identify some key locations where signage may be appropriate.
We did talk to Pierce County Human Services, and because Pierce County focuses on aggressive panhandling, they saw decline, but they did not see a lot of arrests for homeless population. Seattle did a report. There was a gentleman in Seattle who did a report recently, and a lot of the people panhandling are not homeless.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, this is how they get the money.
Yeah.
And so they have a whole game that they do. They go out, they know where they can go, they know where people are going to give, and they go and they have their signs up there. And then when they're done, they leave, and then they come back. So it's not all homeless, and Andy can kind of talk about the homeless situation. But also, the two things I just want to make sure we highlight is, Andy and I, before we started here, we can think about how can we take some of our resources that we're going to need to allocate for 2014, maybe put some up in the Hazeldale area to assist with the services. Mm-hmm. We'll need to work with our providers to see what that would look like. And then we could work with the regional support network around the mental health treatment, but it has to be voluntary for mental health because of the involuntary treatment act. And then we have lots of therapeutic courts here, so our judges and prosecuting attorneys know how to deal with people with some of these issues. So we shouldn't have a problem in that area. But I do want to make sure we don't criminalize a population that ends up getting themselves in a deeper situation where they can't even afford to move into a place if we have that ready because they have now a criminal background. So I like the idea of you guys giving some warnings and how do we do that. But panhandling doesn't solve the problem. And if you want this to stop, people need to stop giving the dollar into when people see the signs. That we have to educate the public that is not going to help somebody in their situation. And if they give the dollar, you don't know what they're going to do with the dollar. So somehow we got to also work to the larger public as well.
And that's exactly what we did yesterday during the community meeting. We explained, I likened it to finding someone on the street with a broken leg. Would you want that person to have pain medication, or would you like to see them have treatment to heal that broken leg? Well, if you want that to be healed, you have to support the services that are available for long-term health, not feeding the alcohol or drug addiction that these folks are taking on day by day.
Has anybody ever taken the direction that they do with prostitution when they go out and they arrest the John instead of the prostitute? So in other words, you would make it against the law to give money out.
We looked at that a little bit, Commissioner, but the difference between a prostitute-John relationship is generally we live in a community where people have good, kind hearts. And the reason they're giving them money is because they have good, kind hearts. We just need to redirect that. I don't know if I'd go that far.
How do you address those individuals that say, well, you're just going to cause them to have an increase in theft elsewhere and you're going to have that unintended consequence? Yes, there's a price to pay, but what message do we provide? And really, not only a message, but how do we deal with that?
Well, obviously, with any change in law or ordinance, it's going to have an impact someplace. We anticipate a bump in behaviors that we are going to be required to manage. But during that education period and normalization period, we're going to find those people who are criminals are going to go away. And we don't want criminals in this community. What we're trying to do is change the behavior of people that need to get over illnesses. Yeah. And if we take that opportunity for them to feed that illness away, we're going to make some productive human beings.
You know, if I could just reinforce the sergeant's comments. In the paper today, it talks about, quoting Sergeant Walker, about us seeing an increase in thefts, burglaries, and robberies. And I think it's important to understand that the word bump is the proper term, a very slight change, not some dramatic change. And it's based upon just a reasonable logic will tell you that, you know, a person who is now begging for money, now can't get it, may resort to going into the local 7-Eleven and stealing a candy bar or something like that. That's something that we can manage through our efforts. The last thing that we want to see happen is that folks who fall into this category of being a part of the vulnerable population just automatically being put into jail. But if they are caught engaged in that behavior, it provides some tools to get them the assistance and things that they can have rather than just being ghosts, for lack of better phrase.
So I see that as two different categories. One is those people that want help, can get help, and those individuals that are here because somehow they can get away with it and they don't want help. They want exploitation to happen and they're part of that. So I assume in the first part category, where they want help, need help, I would assume that there would be a very good cooperation, kind of extra arrangements made with the nonprofit organizations that are really tailored to handle that situation so that when you come across someone, now you can bring them somewhere or you can refer them somewhere where... Because the compassion argument against this is going to be people say, you know, these people are down and out and you're doing what to them? Well, you're helping them. And we need to make sure that with that, not only we have the message, but somehow we do have that bridge of help that is provided. The other part of this is that those individuals that are here because they can get away with it here, just our area is good feeding. They're going to go somewhere. I wonder where would they go? Where's the next? I mean, there's a network. There's community. How's Portland? How's the other? Where would they go?
Well, one reason why it's risen to the not the transient population, but those folks who Vanessa referred to, that they're organized. They actually work shifts. And they stake claims on territory. They have disputes over this is my corner because they stake, you know, this is their where they make their money. One reason why we've seen such an increase in Clark County is because Vancouver enacted their ordinance. And so it displaced a lot of the issues. And I think it's important to recognize that when you control behavior as it relates to criminal behavior, there are a number of things are the goals. You know, eliminate the problem. Well, I can tell you that we are not going to completely eliminate the problem, no matter how hard we try. And so that what you try to do is reduce the problem. You also try to reduce the impacts of the problems. And then, and this is the one point that has always bothered me for my whole career, and that's displaced the problem. Because I always feel like, I feel badly that we're now sending our problem to another community. The reality is, that regardless, that is a reality. That's going to happen. Longview has an ordinance, I believe. You know, and Vancouver does, Portland does, and so
Spokane does. I've researched quite a few.
And so what will happen is folks will find an area where they can get away with it for as long as they can get away with it. And I just, you know, personally, I just don't think it's right for folks to engage in an enterprise where they're unfairly taking advantage of our citizens. And quite honestly, if they're displaced, that doesn't bother me. As it relates to the vulnerable population, that's something that we need to continue to work at, what we can do to assist them, understanding full well that there's a certain percentage of that population that doesn't matter. That's their lifestyle that they choose to be in, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that if we focus on that segment of the population, not trying to displace them, but trying to assist them as much as possible, while reducing the impact, while reducing the other folks that, you know, they can go away.
Last night the sheriff came to our budget readopt and really expressed that you guys need help. Law enforcement, we need more. We need to somehow find a way to make sure you're properly staffed. We're aware of that already.
Mm-hmm.
That bump that would result, I would assume you're going to, would that there would be an extra demand taxing on the sheriff's department in order to handle that. We need to do something in preparation more than that.
I would suggest that we would see a reduction in demand. Because right now, there's behavior that is creating calls for service that we are responding to. Sergeant Walker mentioned that it takes two deputies and an aid car at hundreds of dollars an hour. The where if we had a tool in place that would modify that behavior where people then disengage from doing it, we wouldn't have the calls that we did, which we would actually see less impact upon us.
Where they have these ordinances elsewhere, is there some kind of a logo, some kind of a signage, some messaging that when they see that at a glance, they have a certain color, certain design to it, it's just kind of universal that they know that. I would think that would be an obvious way to communicate that. And surely we're not the first one to face this. They must be signs and posters and those kind of things already thought out.
To a degree, Commissioner, there are in some metropolitan areas. There aren't enough signs in the world to manage all the locations where these people panhandle. And in my experience, working with these people on a regular basis, like Chief Evans said, the word of mouth is stunning. It is absolutely stunning. I can tell someone that this is the rule over here in Hazeldale, and a transient at 162nd and Mill Plain will know that is the rule in Hazeldale. It is truly impressive. I think we need to examine a level of signage because it's only appropriate. But the
where to get out?
Yeah, I think we can keep that fairly minimal, but we should look into that.
So you like the Pierce County example, and you recommend that we adopt that?
It's the best example of a policy of this type that I have found. It is protective, it is restrictive without being totalitarian.
Yeah.
It still allows for panhandling.
And I think the chief would say it also that if it does occur, it gives you the opportunity to talk to them and find out that they are bad people, And like you said, after a while, the bad people don't want to be checked out, so they won't hang around.
I think it's important to recognize as well that whenever you look to someone, some other model, that with very rare exception do we just cookie cutter and say we're just going to adopt this, because there's local considerations, a couple of the questions that Axel mentioned that need to be discussed regarding public places and things like that will be things that we would have to have a process with the board in order to determine how does that model look best here, and then massaging that so it's tailor fit for our community, because that one's tailor fit for Pierce County. It has a lot of great features, but some of them may not be a good fits here, may need some adjusting. So the answer is, we're not recommending that we just flat out accept Pierce County's, but that we continue to work with that, using that as a model for us to build from.
Yeah, we've been dragging this out for about a year, and we'd like to kind of come to a conclusion and put it behind us. So I guess I'm going to ask Vanessa and you to put something together for us so we can get it on a consent agenda for consideration.
That's a public hearing, man.
Yeah. Andy, do you want to add anything? I mean, you work with folks all the time.
Sure, thanks. There are a couple things that I want to talk briefly about. One, I do think there's a misnomer in the background of this conversation that there are sufficient services available in our community for people who need them. That's just not the case.
That's
so,
true.
just very much not the case in housing and homelessness and mental health and substance abuse. So although theoretically the way that this could work is if there was somebody who was panhandling down and out, we could get them into more of a hospital setting rather than pain management. In reality, we can't really do that. And oftentimes, not for the transient population, who we don't even work with that much because they come and go, but the people who really live here and call this home and are homeless and maybe can't handle it, we probably already are working with them. They're probably on our waiting list for assistance, but they're just sitting there. So that's one thing I want to make sure, from our perspective, this sort of ordinance is not going, from my perspective, to encourage people to access services, because it's just not the reality in our community. We can do some targeted efforts, but it's limited in the resources we have. The other point is that, to me, so I would have no issue, and I think lots of communities do, aggressive panhandling ordinances. To me, the Pierce model is not an aggressive panhandling ordinance. It's much, much broader than that. Portland has an aggressive panhandling ordinance, but lots and lots of things in here you can do in Portland. To me, the Pierce model is basically, so you can't outlaw panhandling. It's unconstitutional. So I think what this is are some attorneys trying to limit panhandling as much as they can constitutionally. So there's a section in here that talks about coercive behavior. To me, that's aggressive panhandling. So, you should absolutely never threaten anybody. You shouldn't be aggressive. If somebody says, no, I don't want it, you should walk away. But then taking that a step further and saying at gas stations or at public places, or times of day, to me that's just limits on panhandling, period. And while I don't believe panhandling is the end of homelessness, I don't believe that everyone who's panhandling is homeless, I do think that the majority of people who are panhandling are down and out on the block. They do need the money, whether it's, I know some people I'm sure are using it for drugs and alcohol, other people are using it for food, the candy bar they'd steal from the 7-Eleven. And to me, either, in my opinion, if the county wants to do something like Pierce, I think it would be important, especially ahead of that hearing, to be transparent that this is broader than just aggressive panhandling. This is a broader effort.
If I can piggyback on that a little bit, one of the reasons why it is broader is because our business community and our neighborhoods have been very vocal. You've received the phone calls where businesses are complaining that their business is adversely impacted by the activities of panhandling in their doorsteps and around the gas stations and all those. And so I think it's important that we recognize that we have a balance between the needs of both. And so that's why that the ordinance is broader than just the aggressive.
I, you know, and, that, and I try to bring that up in a couple of points, as the chief said, and I tend to agree with Andy on some of the points as well, where I think we need to look at it very hard and come up with our, if we go forward with this, our own code and ordinance. And I had, when I read the Pierce County model and I mentioned the public places, it was kind of like, okay, you know, that just seems like you're just banning or outlawing panhandling altogether. Same thing with my feeling towards when I read about, you know, at night. Well, that's a significant amount of time. You're just wiping off the map to panhandling altogether. And even some of the specific locations, I kind of, but I do think the coercion and the aggressive panhandling, I think most folks would agree with that. And I think a lot of folks would agree with some of the locations. I mean, I think panhandling at an ATM is a bad idea, you know, those kind of things. So I think there are some good things in here. I think we can get somewhere positive with it. But I do really respect Andy's opinion in terms of, you know, where he's coming from with this does go a little bit farther with it's not just, you know, it's not just aggressive. It does limit just panhandling in a lot of ways.
So I assume the challenge on this is going to be how far do you go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there will be a common base that everybody will say, well, of course we can do that. That's obvious. We need to be able to do that. But then how far do you go in aggressiveness and really making sure that we blend that gray zone and we get that part right? And that process is something where we're really looking to you to define at least what's solid and what's potentially candidates or optional to really work that out.
I think that I can talk but I disagree with you. It's, I think the majority of the people out there are out there other than survival. I think that we have enough that we have a lot of places that we can feed them. We have a lot of shelter, especially the time we have church open coming up. So it was a case like that. You know, I remember one year, just this last year, a co-worker, my wife, quit her job as a school bus driver and was standing on the corner with her two teenage kids. And I think it's because it's lucrative. And that's abuse. I think that's abuse of the drug dealer. I think it's abuse of it. My last friend's on 78th Street. There's a guy hanging up there, hopping up and down on the pole, acting like a monkey. Those are the ones that we think would go away. And the other ones that need help, I don't think there's that many, but I think that the program that we have somewhat proposed would help them. And I think that's what our goal is, to help those who really want to help them, and prevent those who are out there for drugs or something of that nature.
If I could just, I know I'm in danger of losing my invite to the next work session, but so my organization actually fills the spots of the emergency shelters and the housing programs. So, and we do have extra capacity with the Winter Hospitality Overflow, which is a terrific program. We turn away families with children all year long in our community who are trying to access emergency shelter. Before the WHO opened, we had 25 different families with children we were working with who were sleeping in cars or tents. So I hear what you're saying, but from our perspective of when people come to us who are trying to access services and we're trying to place them in programs, you know, we have 300 households on waiting lists who are homeless for different programs. So what we see is of those folks who are trying and coming to us, some of them are waiting for 6, 8, 9 months.
I always go back and look and say, don't you have any other family somewhere?
Mm-hmm. And we,
if there's no any family member buying, they would have to be brought in. But in many cases, they burn those bridges themselves.
Right. Yeah. And I just want to also address about the treatment. So a lot of reasons why they can't access now is they don't have insurance. But with Medicaid expansion coming, a lot of them should be eligible. And Mr. Commissioner Madore would tell you the RSN, they have Medicaid dollars they don't spend. So this will help the RSN providers get access to these clients that need the help. There is going to be a problem with drug and alcohol because we just don't have the capacity. So we've got to do our job to increase the providers. But hopefully some of this should change in January, especially if we start working with organizations to get people enrolled in insurance. So,
and keep in mind, commissioners, that we aren't doing this as a sheriff's office. I'm in the third month of a meeting with stakeholders in community health, the VA, Drug and Alcohol Council. I have a series of meetings coming up so I can understand more to make this work better. And the execution, when we decide to move forward, how to make that smoother and produce more productive human beings when we have the opportunity.
So I guess the bottom line here is that it's a good direction. We certainly encourage it, and it sounds like the need here is the Sheriff's Department, right?
I would say so.
And so the encouragement is there. And the question is there any way that we can encourage or help or somehow accommodate, equip you in order to help you be successful? I assume sounds like you already got it. All you need is
I think we're on the right track. All we're seeking today is your approval for us to proceed.
Absolutely.
To develop a draft ordinance for you to take for have public hearings. We entered into a public dialogue last night with the community, as you probably read in the paper today. The feedback that we received last night and will continue to receive will be very helpful as we address the issues of night, public places, private places, so that we can define the scope to put this together so that we can come back to you with something.
I agree, and that sounds really good. It sounds really encouraging. I like the idea that the Sheriff's Department is heading this up because you guys are going to be the ones out there dealing with this real world situation and working with those organizations and nonprofits that will somehow partner. But I also encourage you to keep track. There are two different audiences here, two different populations. There are those that you're trying to deal with, and there's the population of the community who's then going to be evaluating, saying, I don't get it, I don't understand. And we need to somehow educate, communicate, make sure that message is loud and clear. I wonder if in America here, or wherever those communities are that have dealt with this, if there may be videos that have been put together, little 1 or 2 minute spots that will send the message to the broader, good-hearted community that you think you're helping, but you're actually hurting, you're accommodating. It would be good to be able to make sure that message to our broader community is also well addressed. And I wonder if maybe that's not the Sheriff's Office expertise, maybe that's our Council for the Homeless or other compassion-driven to be able to handle that messaging part of it.
I think that's probably a very important part of the outreach education, and so we will certainly look at that as well.
And I think we'll continue to work with the Sheriff's Department on striking the balance and before we schedule a hearing and come back to the board. And I think that'll be part of the conversation at the hearing for how to implement and roll out whatever policy we decide on. So, okay, this is going to be the balance. This is going to be the decision. We're going to implement this over the course of 6 to 9 months through education, outreach, communication with the community and those potentially impacted. Because like I said earlier, you don't want to just dive right into it and start hammering people for doing something they've been able to do right out of the gate. I think we owe it to them, to whatever we decide, to bring a certain amount of outreach and awareness to the table, as well as maybe warnings, and just let people know that the rules have changed to some degree.
And so we can put this off as long as you want, but if we don't enforce it somewhere along the way, it's going to come out of the gate. And whether we just do it tomorrow, an educational type thing. It's something that you move into to get the word out. But we burn up more time here when we have the expertise to give back the recommendation that we could have a discussion during that public comment.
So I hear you saying you want to
get it done.
You want a hearing sooner than later.
I would like to have it put together and brought to us on the consent agenda for public hearing.
Okay. Well, so we can work that schedule. We can strike that balance sooner than later with what we'll, you know, we'll work on a draft code. Yeah.
A couple tweaks to what we think we might have to adjust the municipality example. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you could take this in one major step and maybe one or two fine tunes. You get something out there that works and it's launched and we have a shell. And you can refine that as you get experience with that and as you get feedback and with amendments happen.
My experience with all every ordinance that we've adopted to address community concerns, loud music, cruising, it's always been a process like that. It seemed like a real good idea at the time, but then we got to tweak this section or whatever, because in practice it doesn't work as well as we thought it might. So,
if I'm hearing you correctly here, the message is don't polish it forever. Give it your best shot, get it done. And the most important part of this thing is really be able to put a tool into the hands so that that message does go out to that community that says that Clark County is no longer the place where it's easy picking.
Yeah. At one time I thought we had some vouchers for homeless families. Mm-hmm.
The housing vouchers?
Yeah. So I think there were vouchers that would put people in a hotel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One or two items, something like that.
Yeah.
That could work in conjunction with this when you find someone, a family who's truly down and out, and not out there just trying to raise some more additional income because they didn't want to drive a bus.
We work with law enforcement on that program.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Commissioner, that voucher program is an excellent program. We love that program.
Yeah.
And we get vouchers for a quarterly period, and within a week to 2 weeks, they're gone.
Is that through the homeless document recording fees portion of the money?
Okay. You manage that, don't you?
Yeah. I'm curious. Those individuals that will stay here regardless, this is home, this is just there are circumstances will require them to stay here, or they just decide they're not going to move. That's one category. The other is those individuals that would go wherever it makes sense for them to be able to go. They're portable, they can do that. There must be communities in the United States here somewhere where they have really shined in this area. They've got their whole, claim or area where they shine is they accommodate homeless very well. There must be a number of those locations where that is the case, that we can refer them or we can somehow help them get help there. Is there?
For the folks who are more transient? There are certainly communities that are looked to as best practices. The tough thing with the folks who are really transient is that we don't have relationships with them. We don't touch them very much because they kind of just come and they're here for a couple days and they move on. So certainly if we, when we pay for train tickets and bus tickets and that sort of thing, it's usually more reunification with family members or someone we've been working with for a while. If we did interact with someone who was kind of just passing through and trying to get somewhere, there's nothing to stop us from helping them get to Hennepin County, for example, which is one of those places.
Okay, well, rather than just simply considering them transient, it could be that you've got a family here and we just can't accommodate them. But we know of another community where they can accommodate them better. They've got somehow an arrangement that they can. And so we could refer them to that community where they can potentially get help where they can't here because we're just maxed out.
It is tough. So most communities try to protect themselves from other communities doing that by having residency requirements and things like that for services. Because actually most places kind of think that other places are referring folks to them and don't like that. So it's not easy to there aren't a lot of places in the country that have kind of taken care of their homelessness problem and have extra resources for additional folks, I guess.
Now in Las Vegas, when I worked down there, what we did have, now this is, it's a different environment because people got stuck down there for gambling and they lost their money, is if you could show and that you had family or you had a residence in another state and they were willing to say yes, they can come stay with you. We did play for bus passes, yeah. plane tickets yeah. to send them back to the home.
And we do that here. So.
In other words, to get them, is to refer them to help. If we can't help them, to refer them to the best way for them to get help.
Yeah.
Which is helpful, but the key thing here is to put the tools into your hands. So we're just going to...
Okay. Well, I think we'll get busy and we'll get that hearing date scheduled sooner than later on the draft, and we'll use the Pierce County draft, and we'll kind of work to compromise where we think you may want to go with it, and we'll present it to you at the hearing, and we'll work from there.
Great. Thank you for your time.
Thanks.